Over the course of the parashas Vayikra and Sav, we encounter five types of korban: oila, chatas, asham, mincha, and shlomim. And what we're going to see in this parashat Sav is that on each of those five occasions, the Torah uses the expression v'zois toiras, and these are the laws of those particular korbanos. Now, if you have a look in Toiras Koyhanim, you'll see that each time that it says zois toiras, the Chachamim learn that it teaches us a specific halacha about one of these five korbanos. Yet, when you look at Rashi, you'll see that Rashi only does that for two out of the five, and the other three he leaves unexplained. So we have to wonder why, because usually Rashi will explain an expression, unless it is self-evident, or unless he's already given us information about it. So maybe what Rashi intends is to say, here are a couple of examples, let me get you started, that you notice that Zois Toiras always means that there is more information than what meets the eye, and you go out and research that, but we'll discover that firstly, practically it doesn't seem to be the case, and secondly, Rashi addresses a five-year-old, and much of the information that he should be exploring isn't going to be immediately accessible to him. So that cannot be an explanation. Instead, what we're going to discover is that the word Toiras only really needs to be explained if it doesn't seem to make sense in context. Zois Toiras, I'm about to tell you information. So if I already know the information, because it was in the preceding parasha, or if the information is self-evident, that will determine whether or not I have to explain Toiras. So if I already have learned everything, why say Toiras? If I'm about to tell you the information, then it goes without saying and Rashi does not have to explain it. And what we're going to discover through the course of this exploration of ours is we'll actually discover that there are two kinds of Zois Toiras, the two ways that the Torah could add further information. Either it could introduce a new brand of a korban or new details within an existing korban. And from that we come to learn a very interesting principle about the difference between kamos and echos, how you measure things in quantity versus how you measure things in quality, with a powerful spiritual lesson for us that sometimes quantity does impact quality. In the early part of this week's parasha, the Torah outlines the five major types of korbanos. Each time the Torah introduces the paragraph by saying, and this is the Torah of, in other words, the set of laws of the following. At face value, when the Torah says Zois Toiras, it's telling you these are the laws. I'm about to tell you the information that you have to know about this korban. Now, even though these korbanos have already been discussed in the previous parasha Vayikra, mikol mokem matima bepasha sein aloshen Zois Toiras mipnei shekan bepasha zoi noisvu oit prote dinim sheloi nemru bepasha hakoidemes. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact that all five of these korbanos have already been taught to us, it is appropriate to say Zois Toiras in each case here because we're going to discover further details or information about these korbanos that we did not previously know. So that's the face value version. Zois Toiras, I'm going to tell you information you did not already know. Aval b'toiras kohanim v'aderech ze b'shas, afinim Zois Toiras ho'ilo, Torah achas l'chol ho'olim shem olu lo yeredu. However, when you look at the Torah's Kohanim, you're going to see the same kind of limud also in the Gemara. It says specifically, because of the language Zois Toiras applied to the korban oila, it comes to teach us something that any kind of oila that was brought up onto the Mizbeach is never taken off the Mizbeach. Meaning, v'hainu, shetevas Toiras bo l'rabbi sug bo'oila, in other words, both the Toiras Kohanim and the Gemara are telling us that this expression, Zois Toiras, is there to illustrate to us that there is a particular type of oila that we would never have known that if it's on the Mizbeach, it is ha-oila, it goes up on the Mizbeach, and once it's there, it does not get removed. What kind? Posel. An oila that has been somehow delegitimized, somehow disqualified from being used, and you would think, oh, quickly take it off the Mizbeach. No. It stays. That's the Zois Toiras, telling us something we would not have known, and it's not spelled out directly in the parasha either. And then the Toiras Kohanim goes, V'alderech ze b'shar abas ha-sugi ha-korbonos, min chechat ha-soshim u-shlomim. Then the Toiras Kohanim applies the same approach to all of the other four kinds of korbonos, that in each case, sheteva Zois Toiras marbe b'kolechon me min korban, ashe lulei ha-riboy, So the Torah's Kohanim then illustrates to us that each time it says Zois Torah about one of the Korbanos, it's to introduce an element of something to do with this Korban that we would not have known. Either it's a whole segment or it's a detail that we would not have known and isn't necessarily even evident directly in the words of the Pesukim. And here we'll unpack them. Like it spells it out in Torah's Kohanim. Torah's HaMincha, why does it say Torah's HaMincha? To teach you. Torah Achas L'chol HaMinochos, Shiyutu Unos, Shemen Ulovoyna. To tell you that there is a common denominator across every kind of Mincha, because we do see that there are various kinds of Mincha, that they always need olive oil, and they always need the ingredient called Levoyna. Which means, Af Menoches She'en Shiorem Necholim K'minchas Koyhanim Tuunoi Shemen Ulevoyna. The Torah kind of explains, for example, when an ordinary person brings a korban mincha, we take a kamitza, a certain amount of the flour, which is then put onto the mizbeach, and the rest is eaten by the koyhanim. But if a koyen brings a korban mincha, the whole thing is burnt on the mizbeach and nobody gets to eat from it. So you'd think, okay, in that case, if nobody's eating, it doesn't need the shemen and levoina, it doesn't need those ingredients. Zois Torah Samincha comes to teach you that even if nobody's going to eat any of the mincha, it still needs oil and levoina added to it. Torah Sachatos, says the Torah's Kalim, Torah Sachol Chatoi, Sheyehei Domom Ton Kibus. What do we learn from Teras HaChatos? That there is a common law across all kinds of Korban Chatos that if the blood gets onto a person's clothing, onto the person, the clothing have to be immersed. They have to be cleansed. Shafiru Chatois Papnimios She'eino Necholois Domam Ta'un Kibus. And the logic over here is that even those rare kinds of Korban Chatos where the blood is brought inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, like for example in Yom Kippur or inside the Kodesh, like various other korbanos brought on behalf of the community. So even though nobody gets to eat those korbanos, still, the blood of those korbanos, if it gets onto a person's clothes, the clothes have to be immersed and cleansed. Teras ha'asham, terach ha'sechol ha'asham, she'hei domom nitin lemato, she'af asham metzera domoy nitin lemato. Then the Teras Kohanim tells us that when it says Teras ha'asham, it's to teach you that when they have to sprinkle the blood of a korban onto the mizbeach, certain korbanos have to be sprinkled above what's called the chut ha'sikra, the dividing line around the mizbeach, and certain bloods beneath the chut ha'sikra. So the blood of a korban asham is always put underneath, always sprinkled underneath the chut ha'sikra, even the asham that a metzora brings at the end of his period of purifying himself from tzoras. And the reason we have to know that is because the Torah compares the asham metzora to a korban chatos, and usually the blood of a korban chatos is sprinkled above the line. So the chiddush innovation over here is that a korban asham, despite being compared to a chatos, every korban asham will have the blood sprinkled beneath the line. And then what do we learn from Teras HaShlomim? That just like a Korban Shlomim, if it's brought inside the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, there are time frames within which you have to eat it, 2 days and a night. And after that, it becomes noisar, leftovers, which have to be destroyed, or pigul, which means if the person had the intention that they were going to eat outside of that time frame, they would actually disqualify the korban up front, and they would transgress a prohibition of the Torah. So Zois Teras HaShlomim teaches you that even when there was a time that you were allowed to make bamos, private altars, outside of the Mishkan in Israel, so even then the time frame is applied. So the Torah's Kohanim says all five expressions, Zois Torah, are to teach me something about each of those five korbanos that I would not ordinarily have known. So what does Rashi say? My shitas Rashi be'anal be'pirushi ala Torah. What does Rashi say in his commentary? Matzonu bozeh dvar pele. We're going to find that Rashi takes a very surprising and what appears to be an inconsistent approach. Because of Zois Torah, the first two times in our parasha where the expression Zois Torah appears, which is ba'oila uve mincha, with regards to an oila mincha offering. There, Pirashashi, Shateras Bolerabo is Teras Achas L'chulon Chule Vehives Alimurim Teras Kohanim. There, Rashi says exactly what the Teras Kohanim told us, that the oila is to teach us that every kind of oila that goes up onto the Mizbeach remains there even if it is disqualified, and that Mincha teaches us that every kind of Mincha always has to have oil and Levoina even if it's not going to be eaten. But the next three, where it talks about the Korban Chatas, the Ashem, and the Shlamim, and it says Zois Toiras, Rashi doesn't say one word of commentary. So that appears to be both strange and inconsistent. But to Mu'a Mimonavshach, doesn't seem to make sense. Im Rashi noiket shatevas toiras hi riboi, hayetzoich leforeish, ma'atoichan haribim mizois toiras afu gimel ha-korbonus ha-acharoinim, chatas Ashem u-shlamim. If Rashi goes with the view that the words Zois Toiras always comes to include new information we would not have known, and that's why he says what the new information is by Oilai Mincha, then logically, why does he not do the same for Chatas, Oshem, and Shlomim? Vim Svirlei Shadrech HaPshat Toiras Einei Riboy Yopirush Kipshutei Kenal Madua Boilo Mincha Pirushu Riboy. On the other hand, if Rashi says Zois Toiras is just to be taken at face value and it means the following are relevant pieces of information that you need to know for these korbanos, and it's not coming to tell us any radical innovation, well, in that case, why does Rashi explain it in the case of Oila Mincha? It appears to be inconsistent. So we'll offer a possible explanation. The Rebbe will reject that explanation on two primary reasons. Rashi Okay, so let's try to take this approach. Let's say that Rashi really does believe that the words Toiras are always there to add more information that we would not have known. In fact, you could even argue that Rashi really highlights this in his wording when he explains the Korban Oil and says, Shekol Toirah l'Rabbi Suba loymater achas l'chol chulei. He uses that expression. He says, every time Toiras is used, it comes to include information we would not have known. And then he gives the example. So if Rashi has already established a principle, which is that the word Toiras always comes to include new information, then he doesn't have to spell it out for us in all five cases. But Rashi could just say, look, now you know how it works. Now you know that Toiras is a word that alerts you to the fact that there's new information, not necessarily overtly in the words. Go and research. And he leaves it to the student to do his research. You'll say, if that's the case, why did Rashi give two examples? As soon as he said Oila, surely that was enough to explain that there's a principle that Toiras comes to include unstated information which you have to know. Okay, he had to explain it with regards to Mincha also, because otherwise you would have thought that there's another possible innovative explanation about Mincha, and you would have gotten distracted. So he has to tell you which particular law of Mincha is relevant. The fact that Rashi does not just leave it up to the student to research what the Toiras of Mincha comes to include, but he spells it out for us. Where Rashi says, exactly as the Toiras Kohanim had told us, that you would have thought only Menachos that are eaten, that's when you add oil and levoina. But if a koyen brings a korban mincha and it's not going to be eaten, you would exclude those ingredients. Talmud loimar, therefore the Torah said the word Torah to teach us every single mincha has shemen levoina. The reason Rashi had to spell it out is because you may have mistaken and thought that the word Torah over here does come to teach us further information about mincha, but a different piece of information. Because b'gemara yalfinen mizois teiras hamincha, the Gemara Menachos tells us that the word zois teiras hamincha teach us teirachas l'chol haminochos, she'af minochos deloy k'siva, deloy nichtevem beferish adin she'shiorei necholen l'keihanim k'goin minchas choyte, harei she'yorei l'keihanim. The Gemara learns that Zois Toiras comes to teach us that even if there is a Korban Mincha where it is not explicitly stated that the leftovers would be eaten by a Kohen after the Kemitzah is taken, the rest of the Mincha would be eaten by a Kohen. So even if it's not stated, Zois Toiras comes to include that every single Mincha, unless it's actually brought by a Kohen, is always eaten by Kohanim. So when you come across the Minchas Choyte, a sinner who has to bring a Korban Mincha, and it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah that Kohanim get to eat the Mincha, you should know that Kohanim get to eat the Mincha. וכדי שלא ניתן לו משל דרך הפשט תורס המנחה מר בדין שאין לו כהן במנחה סחויתו כעל יפוס ובגמורה. So because Rashi does not want us to think that in the pshat simple understanding of the pasuk, Zois Torah comes to teach us what the Gemara had to learn and derive and teach us, that every single mincha has its leftovers eaten by kohanim. So therefore, hetik Rashi bepirushes drashas to hatoras kohanim. Therefore, Rashi dafka mentioned the explanation according to toras kohanim, which is that Zois Torah hamincha comes to teach me that every mincha has oil and levoina added to it. וכפי שכבר פירש רשי לעיל, שהדין הנעל שבשס, שאף מנחה סחויתו שיורר נאכול לנלמד לפי פשוטו, מן הפוסק בפרשה קידמס, ואוי סלה כהן כמנחה. In fact, in the previous parasha, Rashi already told us that when the Torah says that it shall be for a kohen like a mincha, the Torah has already told us in pshat that a kohen always gets to eat the leftovers of a mincha. I don't need to learn it here from a hint in Zois Torah. Okay, so maybe that's how it is. Maybe Rashi's explanation is, I'll give you one example just to get you thinking, and you'll go research the other examples and try to work out what Zois Torah comes to include. Oh, hang on a second, let me spell it out for you with a mincha, because there are two options, and I need to be sure that you understand that the pshat interpretation is the option brought in Torah's Kohanim, not the option brought in the Gemara. However, the Rebbe says there are two reasons to reject this possible explanation. There are a couple of reasons why this explanation is insufficient. Number one, one second. If Rashi already told us that the pasuk in Vayikra is the one to teach us that every mincha the kohanim eat the leftovers, then that automatically means I don't need to know it from this pasuk. So I would never have been misled into misinterpreting Zois Torah HaMincha. So Rashi, you've already explained it. Cannot be the reason why you're explaining it again. But more importantly, Ve'ikar, Eini mistavel klal loyma sheben chomesh lemikra yodea umevim be'atzmoy ma bol enamdenu ha'ribuim b'chatzos ha'shem ushlomim ha'muvoim b'teras koyhanim. It is really a stretch to imagine that the five-year-old to whom Rashi aims his commentary would have the resources to go and find all these explanations. Why it says Zois Torah Achatas or Oshem Vashlomim? Where is he supposed to know these things from? And let's be more specific. Zois Torah Achatas. Meayin leben chomesh lemikra avona shal din chatois apnimius domon ton kibus tzorich limud miyuchot. Now, how is a child going to just automatically, intuitively know Zois Torah HaChatos means that the blood of a korban chatos that goes inside the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKadoshim needs to be cleaned off the clothing? How's he going to know that? You need a special interpretation to get to that point. In fact, logic says the opposite. Actually, the fact that I need a special pasuk for it, why don't I just use logic? If blood from a korban chatas that is sprinkled on the outer mizbech, if that kind of blood could contaminate my clothes, in other words, or make my clothes holy or whatever it is that they have to be immersed and cleaned, surely then a more serious korban chatas, where the blood is brought inside, so it's obviously a higher level of korban chatas, surely I'd have to clean my clothes. So Hava Amina Shechatois Pnimis Enin Tulus Kibus Nomedes B'Torah Kohanim Mikal V'Choyim B'Kodesh HaKadoshim. Just parenthetically, just to explain how the Torah Kohanim got to the thinking in the first place, that you have to explain that the blood of a korban chatas brought inside the Beis Hamikdash has to be cleansed. So it says, Ma'im Kodesh HaKadoshim Sheshovel Chatois Achitzonis Nimriko Shtifa Loi Shovel L'Kibus Chatois Apnimis Loi Shovel Nimriko Shtifa Ein Edin Shlo Yishvo Lehem L'Kibus. So the whole logic behind it works like this. Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the highest form of carbon that exists. We say Kodesh HaKadoshim, like an oila, is similar to a carbon chatas in the sense that the kalim vessels that are used in the Beis HaMikdash to produce those carbonas have to then be put into boiling water and rinsed off as a form of cleansing that blood and whatever else was in it out of those kalim. And yet, those bloods of those Kodesh HaKadoshim, you don't have to clean your clothes. So now, if Chatois HaPnimios, those Chatois HaPnimios, meaning to say those special kinds of Chatos that we're describing over here where the blood is sprinkled inside the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now there we don't require you to clean the vessels. How much more so is it logical that we shouldn't require you to clean your clothes? Now you cannot tell me that Rashi imagines that a five-year-old student is going to work out that logical problem on his own and therefore realize that the Torah had to spell it out in a pasuk that you have to clean your clothes if they get the blood of Chatois Pnimius on them. I mean, is it really feasible that a five-year-old will work out the correlation between the kavachomer of Kotche Kodoshim to Chatois Pnimius? I mean, many of us are probably already stymied just by trying to work out that kavachomer. Especially because the parallel, the connection between the Kodesh Kodashim and Chatois HaPnimius is all about how you treat the vessels that had been used in the process. Rashi doesn't even discuss that. So how is the child supposed to know this? So it's far-fetched to imagine that the child would appreciate why it has to say Zois Teres HaChatos without it being told to him. Likewise, for Zois Teres HaOsham, what did the Toras Kohanim say is the inclusion of Zois Teres HaOsham, that Asham Metzor Niska because of the Yishen Rak La'alon B'Pashas Metzorah. The Toras Kohanim told me that it's to teach that an Asham Metzorah, the blood, is also sprinkled below the line. Now, we don't know about an Asham Metzorah yet. We're only going to get there in Pashas Metzorah, which is still a few weeks away. Is it really feasible to imagine that your five-year-old Chumash student is in this Parashat Tzav already going to intuitively know what's coming in Parashat Metzorah and therefore wonder why or how does the blood work? Oh, Zois Teres HaOsham, I get it. And of course it is far-fetched to imagine that the child is going to know that there's even a possibility that there's such a thing as a bummer, and that a bummer might be different to the Mishkan, and the halachas of Noisar and Pigal, which are only coming on much later. In other words, in simple terms, it does not make sense to argue that Rashi did not spell out the arguments of what Zois Teres means in these three cases because he relied on the student to work it out for himself. It's not something a student is going to work out for himself unless he's a brilliant student and probably not 5 years old. So we're back to square one. Rashi seems inconsistent. Why do you explain what Zois Teres means for the Oila and for the Mincha, yet you don't explain it for the other three? Either Zois Teres is self-explanatory, in which case I shouldn't have to explain it at all, or it is always Lerabois coming to include new information, in which case we have to know what the new information is each time. So it's all going to boil down to the context. Zois Teres, is it logical in context or not? If it makes sense in context, I don't have to explain it. If it does not make sense in context, then I have to conclude that it's there to teach me something over and above what is in the psukim. V'abir bozeh, al-pi derech ha-pshat movement, sha-klal kol tere l'rabois hu-ba. The concept, obviously, when Rashi said with regards to the oila that any time the word Teres is used, it comes to include new information. Obviously, it goes without saying that Rashi's application of any time Teres is there, it comes to include, is only if Teres does not have a simple role in the pasuk. Either it's an extra word, or it's irrelevant to the context. Uludugma. So let's use the first example that Rashi addressed. Zois Teres HaOila. It is not logical to say these are the laws of an oila. They're not. In the previous parasha, we went through the lion's share of the laws of an oila. And now we're just going to get a few extra details. So Rashi says, there's a glaring example that Teres cannot be interpreted in its ordinary way. The following are the laws of oila. They're not. We have the laws of oila, 90% of them. So therefore, over hechech lefarish, she Teres lerabois hu ba loyma Teres achas l'chol ha'oilin. So we have no choice but to say, here's the word Teres, not fulfilling its ordinary function to say the following are the laws of, so I have to therefore conclude that it is lerabois, that it's coming to include something I did not already know. What did I not already know? That kol ha'oilin lo yerdu, that anything that goes up onto the mizbeach b'Teres HaOila never comes down. והדרך זה בזה סטרס המנחה, בזה סטרס אחת עשה, שלא הבדינים נסבור כבר בפשס ויקרו, פשס אין נויס ורק דינים נויסופים, and so it is obvious also that when it says זו סטרס המנחה, it can't be these are the laws of מנחה, because ויקרו gave me the laws of מנחה. So it must be to include something, to include what? That שמן ולבוינה belongs in every מנחה, and likewise with the Korban Chatos, most of the information has already been given to us before, and not yet the detail, these few little details, not enough to say the word Torah. Oh, so why doesn't Rashi explain it? We'll get there. Mashenkin bePasuk v'zeis Torah Osham in Edine Korban Osham lo nichtvu beParshas VaYikra. But when you get to the point where it says the following are the laws of Asham, we say, okay, we don't know the laws of Asham. We haven't been taught them yet. We haven't discussed them in Parashas Vayikra. This is appropriate. Let's talk about it. Shom nizbor rak mi chayev korban Asham, avaloi dina korban atzmai. In Parashas Vayikra, we were only told who would have to bring a korban Asham, but we were given no information about how you bring it, what animal it is, where you bring it, etc. Umemele nintzal derech hapshat, shepir zoistrei asa Asham hu kipshutai, akdomalei dos. So therefore, it goes without saying that Zois Teres Asham, face value. The following are the laws of what an Asham looks like and how it is brought. Likewise, when we get to the Shlomim over here, we suddenly realize, almost immediately, we're not talking about the generic Shlomim offering, we're talking specifically about the Korban Toida, which is a subcategory of Shlomim. As the Torah says, Im al Toida, that we're going to discuss a Toida. Now, we don't know the halachas of a Toida yet. Hine korban Toida in a muska klal bepashas vayikra, umemela zois Torah zevach ha-shlomim, eilei riboy, elo pirusha kipshuta kenal. So we have not heard any of the details about a korban shlomim, a korban Toida. So now we're getting those details, zois Torah works. So effectively, if you look at it, we have two that need explanation. Oilei mincha need explanation because it cannot be that Torah means these are the laws because we have the laws and it must be coming to include something. We have two that it's very obvious that Torah is used in the ordinary fashion because we don't yet know the laws of an Asham and of a Shlomim. So at least of a Korban Toda, which is a subcategory of the Shlomim. So Torah means literal. Chatos is a little bit problematic, right? Because Chatos, the halachas were already explained in Vayikra, and yet Rashi doesn't tell us why it says Torah over here. So why not? Why does Rashi not say one word of commentary about the expression Zois Teras with regards to the Korban Chatos? As we've already mentioned, you can't say Teras means the following are the laws of the Chatos because most of the Chatos laws have already been discussed. So this is not where they're being presented. Ela bole rabbi, so it must be coming to include new information we don't already know. Val korchach shall derech apshat, so whether you like it or not, according to pshat, haribi mitera sachatas, who poshut kol kachshen rashit zorkle kosvel beferish. So you have to conclude that whatever riboy, whatever additional information the Korban Chatos will present to us over here, must be so glaringly obvious that Rashi doesn't have to explain it. Okay, so what is it? The explanation is as follows. The very first thing that we learn after it says Zois Teres HaChatos is that the location where Korban Chatos is slaughtered is the same location in the north of the Mishkan or Beis HaMikdash, north of the Mizbeach. That's where it has to be slaughtered, just like a Korban Oila. Haino, shechatos stam kol achatois afil chatos shokein amashiach vechatos hakol shele nichtav beferish shechitosim batzofen b'okem asher tishochet oila shechitosim batzofen. So what's the riboy? That the common theme of all korbanos chatos is that they are brought in the north, even those where it's not spelled out clearly in the Torah. As we've seen, Torah always comes to include something that applies across the board to the entire type of korban, even if it hasn't been stated obviously. So here too, every Korban Chatos will be sacrificed, slaughtered in the north. Why do we need to know this? There is one particular kind of Korban Chatos where we would have logically thought did not have to be slaughtered in the north. Which one is it? It's a korban oila v'yored, which is where a person has to bring a korban chatos, but it is relative to what they can afford. Hatoli b'yicheles on. Im u'bal yicheles, maybe n'kevim natsun kisbo siras izim. If the person can afford it, he brings an animal as this korban chatas. And if he can't afford an animal, he brings a bird, two birds. And if the person cannot afford a bird, then he only has to bring a mincha-like offering, in other words, a flower offering. So now, because this class of chatas includes the possibility of a version that does not require slaughter at all, not even melika, which you do with to a bird, it's flour. So you would have thought, you would then think, you know what? It's quite likely that shechting is not fundamental to the process of atonement through this particular kind of korban chatas. So you would think, if this is a class of korban where slaughter is not a fundamental part of the atonement process, if that's the case, then the location of the slaughter is irrelevant, even when I bring an animal. So you would have thought that there is one kind of korban chatas which could be shechted anywhere. Therefore, the Torah says, Zois Torah, a riboy, but it's a riboy that is so self-evident that Rashi doesn't have to explain it. What's the riboy? The additional law that will apply to every single chatas that must be shechted in the north. Which will teach us that even the korban chatas that is relative to a person's financial standing, heyoy, said it's a korban chatas, it has to be shechted in the north. Rashi doesn't have to explain it because Rashi knows we'll recognize Torah is a riboy in this case because we've learned most of the halachas of chatas in the previous parasha. And the Torah has led us directly into what it's talking about. So I don't have to tell it to you. You can see yourself what the riboy is. It's just that this will then raise a question in its own right.
So
now we have to ask ourselves the question. One second. We get it. We know why Rashi had to explain Zois Teras Ha'oila, because it's very surprising to use the expression Zois Teras about a korban that was explained in great detail already previously, and the riboy that it's going to teach us is not immediately obvious. We now understand why Rashi has to explain Zois Teras, why he doesn't say a word about Zois Teras Zevach HaShlomim and Zois Teras HaOshem, because it's self-evident this is the first time we're getting introduced to the information. We even understand why Rashi does not explain Zois Teras HaChatos, because he knows that we're going to realize at this point that a Teras is a Lashon of Riboy, because we've already got all the halachas before, and the minute you'll start looking for what the Riboy is, you'll see it straight away in the next words of the Pasuk, so you're good. So why did he have to spell it out for us in the case of the Mincha? Do the same thing. Say, okay, we learned most of the halachas of the Mincha previously, so Zois Teras is a riboy, it has to come include something. What do we see? Oh, we see Shemen and Levoina, let's work it out on our own. And say that every single Mincha requires Shemen and Levoina, even if nobody's going to eat any of it. So Habir Bozeh, the explanation is this. Aderech ha-pshat mistavash Zois Teras bo l'rabes Teras achas l'chol dafkim and again l'dinim o'amurim b'parash Zoi guf alach ha-agdom Zois Teras goymer. Logic will tell you that Zois Teras, logically in pshat, must refer to information that will follow. And will follow in this conversation, in this parasha. In other words, the logic would say we're about to, somehow in this parasha, we're going to learn a halacha, and we'll then extrapolate that halacha to all the various cases of this particular korban. But now that we're talking about the korban mincha, so we want to learn from the Zois Teras HaMincha that every mincha needs Shemen Ulovoina. We do not get told about Shemen Ulovoina in this week's parasha. In this week's parasha, it tells us the concept of taking out the kemitza, and that the kemitza has to include part of the shemen and levoina. But it doesn't tell us in this parasha that in the first place you should put Shemen and Levoina. That was in last parasha. So therefore we could have misunderstood Zois Toras. Hang on a second, Zois Toras, I expect something that's going to still come. I look and I'll find something, whatever it is. I'll find another detail that is described in this week's parasha about Korban Mincha. And I'll say, oh, this must apply to every Korban Mincha. So therefore, Mashmeinu Rashi, Sha'aribo Yehuban and Gela Din Zeh, that's why Rashi has to speak up and has to say, look, it's not usual. It's not common that Zois Toras will be retroactive and refer to information we've already previously learned, but in this case, that's how it is. Plus, there's another reason why we would not have worked out on our own that Zois Toras HaMincha is referring to Shemen Ulovoina if Rashi hadn't pointed it out to us. Because of the order of how things appear. Dine minchas koyhanim, or amurim lachar pashas zois teres hamincha, poiskam bedibre bifnei atzmoi. The Torah tells us first the halachas of a korban mincha, and then it tells us the halachas of when a koyen has to bring a korban mincha, and it interrupts between the two by saying, Vaydaba Hashem Moshe Leim, ezer korban aron revon of goyim. Says, like a new introduction. And Hashem said, which almost sounds like it's a new conversation. We had a conversation about Mincha, and now we're having a new, fresh, independent conversation about the Mincha of a Kohen. The fact that there's a gap between one parasha and the next, that's not so surprising. We know the beginning of Vayikra that Rashi already told us that that's what Hashem does. He gives Moshe an opportunity to contemplate each set of laws before moving to the next set of laws. But what's unique over here is not just a break. Elegam dibur bifnei atzmoi. Here there's a new Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Leimer, like it's a fresh instruction, totally uncoupled from the preceding instruction. It's difficult to imagine that Zois Teres HaMincha is going to link a law of a regular mincha to the law of the Kohen. So the law of a regular mincha is the Kohanim are going to eat it, so Shemen Ulovoino. The law of a Kohen's mincha is nobody's going to eat it, so we'll link it and say, also Shemen Ulovoina. It's difficult to work that out on your own from Pshat because they seem divorced. Vaidabra, there's a separation. There's a mechitza between the two sets of laws. It's interesting because when you see different types of korbanos, they're not separated by a new Vaidabra that Hashem spoke. They're separated just by a break. So the fact that here the Torah puts in a Vayidaber Hashem makes it sound like the separation between Minchas Koyen and regular Mincha is even more extreme than the separation between a Mincha and, let's say, a Chatos or a Nosha. So therefore Rashi had to spell it out for us and had to explain to us because we would not have worked it out on our own. So, in summary, Korban Oila he had to explain to us just to teach us the principle that Torah is a Riboy. Korban Mincha he had to explain to us because we would get completely waylaid and not know actually what the Riboy is. Korban Chatos he doesn't have to explain to us because we'd know there's a Riboy because Chatos we've been given all of the information in the previous parasha, so we know Zois Toras is not literal. And we'd find the Riboy by reading the next few words that it's where you shecht every single Korban Chatos. And the last two, we don't need any explanation because this is the first time we're getting the details of an Asham and the details of a Toda. So Zois Toras is literal. So Pikola Nal Nimta, we're now going to see that actually there are two ways in which a Riboy could work. There are two kinds of Riboy that the Torah might have offered us when it says there's more information than what meets the eye. So Nimta Shatoichan Aisofa Shaparash Pasha Karbonis Bepasha Sein Ala Karbonis Shabapasha Vayikra Nechlik Lishnei Sugim. So we can now see that whatever it is that we're getting, the additional information in this parasha over what we already knew in Pashas Vayikra could be one of two ways. Either we could have a sofas prote dinim chadoshim b'karbonis oilem mincha v'chatos. We could either be getting new details about a carbon we already know about, like the carbon oila. Oh, not only do healthy carbonis stay on the mizbech, but even a carbon that's posel stays on the mizbech. Or we could get a sofas carbonis acherim ashem v'toida, shedineim lo nizbor klal koinam lechein. Or we could get brand new carbonis that we didn't know about before. We did not know about an asham in Parashas Vayikra. We did not know about a toida in Parashas Vayikra. And the truth is, even the first three, we could actually say it's teaching us elements that we did not know before. Rashi actually detailed these two different kinds of riboy when he described the first one where there is a riboy, the Torah So'ila. What does he say? First of all, he tells us it comes to teach us al hekter chalavim veivarim shei kosher kol halayla din shenema miyad besomach bepasach halam izbech kol halayla ad aboiker. The first thing Rashi identifies is those Torahs comes to teach me a detail that the extras of the karbonis that don't get eaten, they can burn on the mizbech all night long. The chalavim, the fats that you're not allowed to eat, the evarim, the limbs that have to be part of the oila offering, that goes onto the mizbech all night long. And then, secondly, and then the second thing it comes to teach us is that there's a principle that certain karbonis, when they go onto the mizbech, if they are disqualified, you have to remove them, and others, once they're on the mizbech, they're on, and that's what you learn about an oila, that kol oila is any kind of oila offering, once it's on the mizbech, you never take it off. So, effectively, we could say that the two groups of riboy, the two types of extra halachas that you could learn about a carbon, could be either you're learning more about the quantity of the carbon or about the quality of the carbon. In other words, when I learn further information about an existing carbon, I'm taking the carbon and adding more information, more quality to what I know about the carbon. Whereas Vasuga Sheni Yosef becomes Oid Min Carbon or Yosef becomes a carbon shechol hadin. The other alternative is where I add more quantity. He has another carbon you didn't know about before, or he has another scenario where this carbon's rules also apply. Okay, so those are the two possibilities. Either I nuance the carbon and I learn more of the quality of how the carbon operates, or I add to the carbon and learn more scenarios or more carbonis. The fact that the Torah gives us the possibility of learning not only more details of an existing carbon, but new carbonos too, that has a great lesson for us. Generally speaking, physical things are primarily measured in quantities, and spiritual things are primarily measured by quality. So here's our lesson. Sometimes you add spiritual value dafka by adding physical quantity. Most people don't think that. Most people think spirituality is increased with more spirituality. But here we're learning that sometimes spirituality, which is quality, is increased with added physical. That teaches us that the path to real spiritual engagement and growth is not to shut yourself off from the world and be a hermit who is only engaged in spirituality. But actually, one of the most incredible and important ways by which we get to add holiness and spirituality to ourselves and to the world is dafka by taking physical things and making them holy. A person would think that the most spiritual achievement that you ever have is in a spiritual arena. Well, it's actually not that way. It's when you get the spiritual to overwhelm the physical, to redefine the physical, to turn quantity, mass into quality, value, and energy. That's actually when you do the ultimate of serving Hashem. Our job in this world is not to run away from the world and live in a spiritual utopia. Our job is to take the world and transform it into something of holy value. One of the ways that you can expand this principle of how additional kamus volume adds to spirituality, to eichus quality, is by reaching out and touching and influencing as many Jewish people as possible. To the point that you even touch those Jews who some might claim apostle, disqualified from being Jewish, and you get them onto the Mizbech, and you don't only get them onto the Mizbech, but as Rashi says, you get them to a point of connection and holiness that they can never go back from. When we are successful in that way, Meir Einei Shneim Hashem, then Hashem illuminates both them and us. That has an impact on us when we influence as many people as possible to bring them close, to bring them onto the Mizbeach, to elevate them in a way that they'll never turn back. It adds to our own avoida. And in a totally different, not quantity of avoida, but quality of avoida. That then invites us to have the opportunity to be, so to speak, on Hashem's Mizbeach, willing to give everything of ours to Hashem, absolutely give up our own being. As the expression in the pasuk goes, all night until the morning, right through the darkness of Golus, we'll be able to be absolutely connected to Hashem until we have the dawning of the time of Mashiach, which had happened, takef umiyad mamash.